Get Talent Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Get Talent Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Cross, joined by my co-host and colleague and cohort and co-defendant, Danny Herskowitz.
How you doing, Danny?
Good. I like that introduction.
They're all three truths and a lie. That's good. Danny, why are we talking about M&A today? What's going on?
Just a couple of reasons. The first thing is some of the companies that we've been talking to, potential clients, have been, you know, bringing up this topic a lot. I've been doing some research on myself. And then also, I know here at Glomo, you're involved in M&A work as well as part of one of our key services. So I thought it'd be really good to talk about that and how it relates and impacts hiring.
Yeah, you know, M&A activity is one of those huge catalysts for new talent. And there's many reasons for it. And we see it quite a bit. In fact, obviously, every time you hire somebody, it's not because there's been M&A activity at your firm, quite the opposite. But whenever there is M&A activity at the firm, there's always new hiring. I really enjoy it because this type of talent searching is really strategic in nature. So it's not as tactical as, say, you know, I need a new compensation analyst or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But this is more like, I'm trying to execute a strategy. That strategy might be a roll-up of similar companies. That strategy might be trying to go public in a couple of years, right? So there's something going on, and they need key people to execute that. And so it's a unique challenge. It's really exciting, and it often involves several executive hires and not just one. Danny, you gave some stats here, I think, that are really interesting. You want to share some of those?
Sure. First stat that I came across was by McKinsey & Company. The recent European M&A conference in 2023, hosted by McKinsey and Goldman Sachs, said that more than half of the participants polled said that they expect to increase their M&A activity or pursue transformative deals this year.
That's exciting because I think people intuitively would think that there wasn't going to be a lot of M&A activity because of, you know, the economy, but also more importantly, I think the cost of money. But there is a major shift towards consolidation throughout global industries and global verticals. We're seeing this this race right now towards a winner take most in a lot of verticals, right? We're seeing in the relocation industry, as you're seeing rapid, you know, consolidation. And so this is happening in every industry. It's not just relocation. It's happening everywhere.
You know, this is actually a new area to me. And I think to a lot of people, even people that have been in the workforce, right? If they haven't been through it, what is the difference between a merger and an acquisition?
Sometimes they're similar and sometimes there's elements of a merger. But I mean, typically a merger is when two companies come together and an acquisition is when one buys another. Defining lines there and how the deals are kind of constructed changes. And a lot of times, even in an acquisition, the controlling members stay on in a management capacity for several years to ensure the investment, ensure things run smoothly in the transition, right? And there's usually a period called an earnout or a workout where people, you know, where the CEO or the executive team, key people are retained for a year, 3 years, sometimes 5 years. So there you go. But I mean, a lot of times they're used somewhat interchangeably.
Yeah.
Sometimes this term of M&A is thrown out there because it's like, we're not gonna get into who bought who and who's on top.
Yeah.
Just gonna, you know.
In what ways does it impact talent and a company's recruitment strategy?
I think that it always has an impact on talent, whether or not people admit it. I remember the first time I got bought. I was at Pods and I was a call center supervisor. And they pulled us in the conference room and they said, "Don't worry, everybody. This wonderful company from Bahrain bought us called R Capita, and they are super cool, really smart, and everything's going to be great. Don't worry. We no longer work for the founder entrepreneur, Pete Warhurst. You're going to see some new people around, but it's okay. Don't worry about it." And so we're like, okay, all right, you know. And within 6 months, probably, the vice president that I reported up under and the senior director I reported up under were gone. And then when they left and landed somewhere else, they then took the management team that they had with them. Right. So half the managers left as well.
Right.
Now, it didn't change my day-to-day. My day-to-day probably changed later because when they left, then new people came in, new leadership came in. Because the premise in any acquisition is that the company is going to be worth more to the buyer than it's worth to the seller. And how do you take a company yesterday worth, let's just say, $1 million, and all of a sudden it's going to be worth more than that tomorrow? How does that happen? Can it stay the same? It's got to change. It's got to change some ways significantly.
So you said it didn't change your day-to-day, but what about the culture?
You know, it's interesting. It's definitely a shift towards a high-performance culture, right? It was a shift towards high-performance culture, more metrics-driven. There was less of a feel for the business because they weren't from that business. They were coming in as outsiders. They were probably smarter business minds in general, but they had less industry knowledge.
Yeah, they didn't have the experience that comes with all those years.
So typically you see companies like that tend to disregard industry experience in favor of proven track records at companies similar to theirs.
Right.
And that can be a rub. That can be sometimes where there's a loss of trust and where people feel disrespected a little bit in organizations.
Yeah.
And this can bubble up into serious retention issues.
So there's another interesting study that we found. So according to Deloitte, 47% of executives leave a newly merged company in the first year of integration, while 75% leave by the third year.
You know what? That doesn't surprise me. It's one of those things that they don't want people to leave like day one, because you want people to like kind of chill. But by the end of the first year, a year is a long time.
It is. It is.
You know, and so by around that 6 month mark, you start to see people start to like go find
right
to be successful. So there's like three reasons really why an executive team may turn over. The first one is like the situation at Pods in the first go around where we got bought. The founder, owner, CEO sold the company. So they're out. Like they're looking for an exit. So that one's kind of logical, right? And then when they leave, usually the executive team that was around them that bought into the dream, that was along for the ride, might even had equity themselves and punched out as well. They often leave with them.
Playing golf also, yeah.
The other reason is the acquiring company. Remember what I said, they have to make the new company worth more than it was worth under the prior regime. Well, inherent in that is they have a strategy they're trying to execute, and they have a set of business principles they work with, and they're going to install the people that they believe can execute that strategy. And the last thing I see is the acquiring company wants to install a management team that they trust. The management team that existed prior is probably going to be loyal to the previous owners. So a new CEO is usually going to bring in a lot of their new C-suite.
What about employer branding? I mean, that's something that we talk about. How is this impacted, and what can people do to ensure that, you know, their brand is still a strong one and one that's attractive to people?
A couple of things I think that are really key. One, you have to have a CEO with a lot of empathy, a high empathy CEO, a person that understands and has the humility to say, hey, I'm really good at leading, but I don't know everything. In fact, we're buying you because you know things. You have intellectual property. You have a market position that we want. So we're buying you because we respect you. There's some firms out there, and I've worked for both kinds. There's some firms out there that come in and have zero respect for the company they're acquiring.
Yeah.
Well, that's a pretty arrogant position because you're new. You're new in this company. You only can see it from the outside. You don't really know how it works, right? And so to think that you can do something better than people who've been doing for 5-10 years have been doing it, you know, it's kind of an arrogant position. I find that the ones who are truly successful come in and say, teach me what I don't know about y'all. What is your secret sauce? What makes y'all special? Because if people feel respected, they're going to stay. If people feel disrespected, they're going to leave. So, I mean, so there's some good parts of it, you know. The company that is acquired is, I mean, they are oftentimes better. They've been acquired for a reason. A lot of new ideas are flood in, a lot of new leadership, a lot of new thoughts. And if you can stay open-minded to it, you can really grow tremendously as a professional.
It sounds like a lot of what the podcast we talked about, coachability, where you're saying like the CEO has to have that mindset and then the employees do. So makes sense, someone coming from that experience and succeeded in that, they'd have to have that mindset.
And I think, you know, when we look at what kind of roles are most common, right, that are being hired for when this happens. Number one, right off the bat, new CEO or president. A lot of times you see finance not replaced because there's typically a CFO at the acquiring company, but you might see like a new COO. You almost always see sales talent turnover, either right. CMO or chief revenue officer, CSO, chief sales officer, you oftentimes see new salespeople. Because when we talk about putting in people you trust, who are the least trusted people in the organization?
Right.
Probably the salespeople. Right. Nobody believes the salespeople, okay?
No.
All right. Nobody believes the salesperson. That was the one thing I saw the most turnover when I was going through my acquisitions was in sales leadership. So now, you know, I mean, so this is the cycle that happens.
Yeah, that's really interesting. What can people do about it? I know you said that having an empathetic CEO is like key, but what can they do to prevent some of these challenges?
You know, what you need to do is you need to go start talking to customers. If I'm a CEO that acquires a new company, I'm in front of every customer we have in the first 90 days, understanding why they buy from us, what we do that's exceptional in the market, and really understanding our value proposition as an organization.
Right. We talk about
your
persona, right?
Yeah.
Understand.
You know, I'm all meeting with every single person in the company. No matter how big it is, I'm meeting with everybody. If I have to do town halls with like the downlines, I'm doing it, but I'm meeting with every person in the company as much as possible. And I'm really just taking it as much as possible because I need to understand what I got on my hands. You said something, actually. You found a stat here about what makes companies successful.
Yeah, exactly. According to Bain & Company's Reimagining Talent 2022 M&A report, they said that executives who successfully retain key talent through integration say that it's really about establishing a compelling vision for the future. That's the most important thing when it comes to success.
Yeah. And I'd say the one thing that they're missing here, the thing that's compelling about a vision is I feel that it incorporates my feedback as an employee. So first, before you tell me what your vision is, I need to know that you've heard my input. So you're having these conversations and then you get in front after your three months of having conversations, get in front of everybody and say, okay, here, boom, here's our vision statement. Here's what we're doing. Here's where we're going. And I think that's how you express a compelling vision for the future. People need to understand that they have a place in this new organization, you know, and they want to hear it from the top and they want to hear it directly.
So any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think that really the message is for the people doing the acquiring, right, is to remain empathetic, to remain humble, and to remain curious. You know, you go in and it's hard to do that. It's hard to have those things. You're going in, you're making multi-million dollar bets, right? And so in order to make multi-million dollar bets, you have to have a lot of certainty. You have to be pretty sure about what you know about this company and your ability to do it better than the last person did. So how do you have all that certainty and then also remain very empathetic and humble and listen? It takes a lot of self-awareness, you know? And so I would just really counsel and encourage people who are executing these acquisitions to remember the people who make the company great, because without people, there aren't companies. Companies are just groups of people working towards a common financial goal, right? And the company's only gonna be as good as the people. Mm-hmm. People are only gonna be as good as the vision, the clarity, and the inspiration they're given, which comes from the leader. So I just, I think that those, we call them soft skills, and I've heard people say, don't call them soft skills. But I mean, those kinds of skills are really the ones that I think are underappreciated in the process. It's not just spreadsheets. It's not just math and synergies. There's real people behind
it all. That's really good. Thanks for giving your perspective on this. I think you have a really good, some really good insight on this, going through it yourself and then, you know, doing deals as an outsider also for companies. So yeah, this is a great topic. And I'm sure it'll help a lot of people get a better understanding of this.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to talk about this. And I think that I appreciate you bringing this one up, you know, and it's kind of in our wheelhouse. And it's something that we're continuing to evolve our understanding of as well. But it's a lot of fun to do this kind of stuff. It's really exciting. We're not on the front of the jet ski. We're not on the back. We kind of get to watch, you know, which is also a fun thing to do at the beach, watch people on jet skis. So it's kind of our position as talent partners, you know, as a recruiting firm in these processes. So super cool. Yeah. Hey, thanks everybody for tuning in to the Get Talent Podcast. Please do like it, leave a comment, and leave a review on the podcast channels as well as the Get Talent Podcast. I'm Ben, that's Danny, and this was a lot of fun. Take care, y'all.
Take care. Thanks.